This is Barry Mack from Irish Australian Radio. On the line from Ireland, we have the one and only Phil Coulter. Phil, thank you so much for your time. It's very kind of you to speak to us here on Northside 99.3. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and I'm very happy and very glad to be talking to yourself, Barry. It's a long time since I was interviewed on radio in Australia. A long, long time. It's I can't even remember the last time I played a gig in Sydney, Australia. A long, long time ago. It's been on my bucket list for some years to get back to Australia and do some gigs, but it just a schedule that got crowded with other things, Barry, and doing touring other places. Australia just got put on the back burner, I'm afraid.
You're an amazing character. You know, my radio show has been going on different stations for the past 15 years, and my theme song in all that time has been Ireland's Call, that beautiful song that you wrote, and it's, of course, the rugby and national anthem these days, and they use it for other... Fantastic, and I love it. It really... I look forward to listening to it, because I know when I hear it, I'm going to go and do my show. And
the Ireland's Call thing is curious, man, because in the corona crisis that we're living through right now, Ireland's Call has taken on a whole new meaning here at home in Ireland as an anthem that's been adopted outside of the purely rugby thing, you know. And indeed, when the corona hit first here, there was an appeal for Irish medics from Australia, for example. Irish medics who were now working abroad in the likes of Australia or New Zealand, the appeal went out, and the appeal was called Answer Ireland's Call. So I was very flattered at that, Barry, because the very phrase Ireland's Call is one that really didn't exist, you know, until I came up with that title. So it's something which is now passed outside of just purely the rugby anthem and become something else entirely. And that's the kind of satisfaction as a songwriter. That's even more important, you know, getting a number one record or selling a million copies. If you get a song that passes into the public domain like that, you know.
You're an amazing fellow. How on earth do you get all this stuff? You've done so many things over the years. I've been reading a list. Well, I've been playing your stuff for years anyway. But I think you were over here a few years ago. I don't know what I was doing, but I missed you. I really wanted to have a chat with you. And one minute you were here, next minute you were gone.
That's right. You're absolutely right. I'll tell you, it was one of the busiest schedules that I had. I was in Japan, first of all, in Tokyo. I did my last gig in Tokyo, flew to Sydney. The following day was St. Patrick's Day. I was at the parade in Sydney and on the platform afterwards, and then had a car to take me straight from the park, where that was all happening, straight to the gig that night. And funny enough, in the front row, I remember this one very, very well, in the front row of my gig, much to my surprise and delight, was Billy Connolly. Billy had been down there on tour, spotted that I was gigging, had a night off, so came without any warning to me and plopped himself on the front row. So it was a very memorable night, I can tell you.
Isn't that really lovely? That is so good. So your latest venture, you can't hold you down, really. You're really into the latest technology. What's your latest adventure or venture that's happening very, very soon, actually? Maybe tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, tonight.
Tonight.
Well, to give you a bit of the backstory there, Barry, when the COVID thing hit and our business, the entertainment business, the performing, just fell off the edge of the cliff. There was no touring, there were no gigs, there was no recording, there was nothing. So faced with that kind of reality, it wouldn't be in my nature to sit in a corner feeling sorry for myself and blaming the government or the Chinese or anybody else. The thing to do is just kind of like adapt to the new situation. So with the encouragement of a couple of younger guys in my team here, they encouraged me to throw myself into the whole technology thing, the whole online social media thing. So, to be honest, I'd had a Facebook page, Barry, for maybe 10 or 12 years. And in those 10 or 12 years, I think I visited that page maybe 10 or 12 times in total. But they said, we need to reactivate this Phil Coulter music page. So, the Facebook page now became my kind of area of operations. So, for the last 3 months, Barry, we've been doing, every Saturday afternoon, we do what's called the Lockdown Lounge. Where I do 30 or 40 minutes just live, sit at the piano, play a few tunes, tell a few stories behind the tunes, read from my memoir that I published last year called Bruised Never Broken. And we've been doing that for the last, what, I think 11, 12 weeks. And then I through the week, I post a couple of videos, either by myself or by a couple of guests, whether it be Geraldine Branigan, who's now my wife, of course, or some other guests like George Hutton from Derry, Roy Buckley from Cork. We spread it around a little bit. So we keep the content going regularly for all of those months. And in that time, the surprising thing for me and the kind of exciting thing for me was we've had more than 1 million hicks on that Facebook page. So that tells me two things. It tells me that there's a big world out there outside of the immediate live audience. My first goal by was really to try and reach my own fans, to persuade them and let them know, look, I'm still alive and I'm still active and I'm still still contributing here. But the next stage from doing the lockdown lounge and the live stream, the next stage was to step the game up and do a live stream concert. And that's what's happening on Saturday night next. We're doing three nights starting tonight in a sweet little theatre in County Meath called The Venue in Rathulf. Lovely little town in Meath. We've played it a number of times. What we're doing is this. They have reconfigured the theatre. The stage is on the ground, sort of flat level, and then the audience used to be kind of in bleacher style seating, raving ahead of you. We've taken all the seats out and have configured that area as a sort of a nightclub with 10 tables of four each, so an audience of 40 to keep within the restrictions, the COVID restrictions of numbers, etc. So we're doing that tonight, tomorrow and Saturday, but on Saturday night we're live streaming the concert online around the world, and for the last number of weeks we've been promoting that, and the fans and the followers who've been following us on the lockdown lounge can now click on to the link for the venue Rathulf, and they can buy an access code which allows them to watch a full 90-minute concert, and it's proper, with the stage,
sure,
with a set, with lighting, with multi-cameras, the whole thing. It's not just like from my bedroom, I mean, it's a proper thing, Barry. So it's a first for me. I'm jumping in the deep end, but I think you have to do something. You have to do something to keep active, because apart from effectively getting back to work and having an audience, even a smaller audience, but I'm putting my crew back to work as well. So we're trying to breathe life into something that's been dead for too long.
It's brilliant. It's a huge effort and very well thought out. Another little matter, I love the tribute you did to the late John Hume. That was lovely. Town I loved so well. You did that.
Yeah.
You did that lovely. You've got a.
I'm curious about that, Barry. That clocked up 145,000 views, which probably tells you more about John Hume than it does about Phil Coulter, but it was very impressive and very moving. I have to say that for those moments when at the end of John's funeral, and to begin with, when John passed away, we were all, those of us who were close to John, were kind of disappointed that because of the COVID, he wouldn't get the state funeral that he deserved, with the dignitaries and the bells and whistles and the mass choirs and this, that and the other. But you know what? A much more appropriate funeral for John Hume. It was a dignified, low-key farewell from his own time. I mean, we gave him a send-off. These were Derry folks saying goodbye to one of their own. And when I was playing The Town I Love So Well as a retiring John out of the cathedral, it was very poignant for me because I was thinking back not so much on John Hume, the statesman, the architect of the peace process, or whatever, but I was thinking about as somebody that's been a friend of mine since we were teenagers,
It was lovely. You did it so well. Phil, thinking back, did you ever think that you would reach such heights in your career from a man that's come from all the way from Derry? Here am I sitting in Sydney and talking to somebody from Derry. It's a very special person. And the other thing too, even with your huge success, you've done a lot of good for the community over there as well. And that's, I'd like to acknowledge that too. That's good karma. You're a good guy. You've done well.
Well, I mean, what goes around comes around, and sure, I'm very proud of my Derry roots. I'm very proud of my roots. You're absolutely right. Not in my wildest dreams. I mean, I wasn't born into any kind with a silver spoon by any stretch of imagination.
No.
My mother came from the markets in Belfast. My dad came from County Down, and he was a peeler, as they called him, then a cop on the beat. So, you know, we came from a very modest terraced house, no great luxuries at all. I was fortunate that I got a scholarship to, first of all, to St. Columb's College in Derry, which was a great grounding, and that taught me a great work ethic. Not only myself, but people like John Hume, Seamus Heaney, Brian Friel, Paul Brady, are all graduates of St. Columb's. And when we spoke of it, when we've spoken about that subsequently, we've all agreed that although we're different characters and our life's paths have been very different, what we all have in common is that great northern work ethic, which was kind of beat into us in St. Columb's. And then from there, I got the scholarship to Queen's University in Belfast. And without a scholarship, my parents could never have afforded to send me to university, never. So from then, of course, it was to London and to try and cut my teeth in the music business. But I can tell you this, that growing up in Derry as a teenager, and up in the little attic bedroom that I shared with my two brothers, listening to a little beat-up radio and hearing Elvis Presley singing Hound Dog or Don't Be Cruel or Heartbreak Hotel, not in a million years did I ever think that Elvis Presley would sing one of my songs. But that's the great thing about the music business. You just, you know, the impossible becomes the possible, and sometimes the dreams do come true.
Well, you deserve every bit of what you've done. You do it so well, and you've a hell of a talent. And I can even hear it in your voice, the enthusiasm that you have for what you do. I can hear you still get a hell of a thrill out of your activities.
Yeah? I do. And you know, people have said to me, Phil, you know, I'm 78 years of age, and they say, with all this COVID thing, you know, and all the troubles that the industry is in, and the prediction is we probably won't get back to work in terms of serious touring until probably the end of next year. So people say, I mean, not just pack it in at this stage here. I mean, it's so tough out there. I have to tell you, Barry, that's the last thing on my mind, to pack it in or to retire and give it up. Because thanks be to God, I still have my health. And I'm equally grateful for the fact that people still buy tickets, people still buy my albums. I mean, we are in November, we're releasing on vinyl, which has become like the new kind of collector's item.
Indeed.
We're releasing a double vinyl called The Collection, Phil Coulter, The Collection, which is doing 1,000 copies, all being numbered, because they're going to be like kind of collector's items. But that's, again, Barry, that's a question of, you know, trying to bring something fresh to the party, trying to kind of, you know, I mean, in my 55 years in the business, I've had to continually reinvent myself, you know, to keep current. I mean, you know, when I reinvented myself, having been a pop songwriter and record producer for the Eurovision Song Contest, Sandy Shaw, Puppet on the String, congratulations. Then the Bay City Rollers, Saturday Night, and et cetera, et cetera. And all of the above, the Dubliners, Luke Kelly, the Fury Brothers, Paddy Riley, all those productions. Then, again, I reinvented myself as a piano player and a recording artist with Classic Tranquility. And that was, I mean, again, that was a jump into the unknown. I had no idea where that was going to lead me. But that's the kind of, you know, those are the kind of chances you have to take. And you have to be, you can't just tread water in the music business, Barry. If you tread water, one thing's going to happen. The current is either going to take you downstream or you're going to sink.
I think you're right. You've certainly, that's why you've succeeded in the way that you have done, with your attitude, your enthusiasm, and you know, you need to do different things. You need to have guts, and you've jumped at chances, and everybody can see what the results are. You know.
Well, you know what? The thing is this. One of the great fallacies and one of the great mistakes that a lot of aspiring performers or songwriters make, one of the great mistakes they make is that because they're talented, that the world owes them a living. You know, there's a sense of entitlement which is completely misplaced. You know, they just didn't get the memo. It's completely wrong. You're entitled to nothing. I'm entitled to nothing. Just because I sold out the National Concert Hall last year doesn't mean I'm entitled to sell it out this year. I'm entitled to do it if I do a great performance, and if I give people like what they're paying money to see, you know, and they have to see that I'm making the effort and I'm putting my effort into the thing, you know. So you're not entitled to anything. You're as good as your last song, or as good as your last album, you're as good as your last concert.
You know, people, up and coming musicians should listen to what you've just said there, because they'll learn a lot. It'll change their attitude. You're absolutely right. And yours is your attitude is the key to success. And you've proved that many times over.
Well, I tell you, if you show me anybody who survived in the music business for 50 years, I mean, some of my heroes would be like the likes of Paul Simon, James Taylor, Randy Newman, Tom Waits. You know, those kind of guys are still active and are still playing. Why? You show me one of those guys, I'll show you a hard worker. These guys know how to work. You know, the talent only gets you into the game. It's the hard work that keeps you in it or progresses you down the road. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. There's no free rides.
But the thing is, those people, they don't play for money. They've got enough money. They play for because it's something that they actually like to do. It's it keeps them buzzing as well. They find the key to enthusiasm,
yeah,
and keeping going.
The option, you know, the alternative is something which is not very attractive, which is just to kind of switch off, retire, and wear your slippers and read the paper and drink coffee or go for walks. You know, I mean, for somebody who's been active and been creative, you know, and who's had his brain stimulated all the time. I mean, you know, I have to tell you that thanks be to God, at 78 years of age, I'm still as energetic as I ever was. I'm still full of ideas. I mean, one of the other things I've been up to in the last few months is I've been co-writing with two of the major young talents coming out of Ireland. I mean, one of the biggest of the new crop of bands here in Ireland is a band called Picture This. They just sold out 5 straight nights. They'll be tipped here as being the new U2. And why did I pick them to write with? Because when I hear their hits and I hear their songs, what I hear, my ear as an old-fashioned pop songwriter, I've been trained in Tin Pan Alley, I listen out for like pop songs, you know, and they for me are the guys that are turning out, you know, the pop songs with a good hook, with a good melody, with a well turned out lyric, etc. So in co-writing with a couple of young guys who are like 25 or something, what they bring to the party is a lot of energy, a lot of new ideas, a lot of current know-how. What I bring is a skill set that I've learned over 55 years. So it's been a very interesting and a very stimulating combination. That's the kind of thing you have to do to keep your brain active. Otherwise your brain just kind of goes into sleep mode.
They must be very happy to have you involved in their career, because I have been listening to a bit of their music. It is something special, isn't it? Absolutely. Phil Coulter, you're an amazing fellow. I really love talking to you, and I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you're a very, very busy person, and I'm going to wind this up, and I'm going to let my listeners know tomorrow. I'll be on tomorrow for 5 hours straight from tomorrow morning. I'm looking forward to it. And
you should let them know about it, because they kind of have a chance. I mean, I don't, this is about the only chance anybody who's got an ear for Phil Coulter music and would fancy seeing a 90-minute concert, they can get on that link.
I will.
The venue at Hoth, that'll show them how to get to the tickets. And bingo, full 90-minute concert. And nothing would make me happier. Nothing would give me more pleasure walking that stage to think that we've brought in some new believers from far away as Australia. To which I have to say, I have a bit of a connection, because my daughter Alexandra lives in Sydney. She's been there for a number of years and loves it. And much to the distress of her mother, Geraldine, she has no intention of coming back to Ireland because she loves it so much.
It's a great place. I've been here for many years myself. I'm from Armagh, so as I'm sure you might have figured out with my accent.
Yeah. My ear told me that you weren't exactly from County Cork, Barry. My ear was good enough to know. You were from not too far from myself. Hi there, this is Phil Coulter, and you are smart enough to be listening to Barry Mack on Northside Radio.